Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to All About Acting on. I'm the co-host, Jonathan Moody. The host of the show, Laura Jean, will be calling in very shortly. She's running a bit late from being on set, so she will be calling in. But before she calls in, we've got our lovely, lovely guest who's been on I know she's been on Independent Corner, one of my old shows, for a bunch of times. I think maybe four times at least, you know, if not more. Please welcome Tina Grimm. How are you doing, Tina?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for having me again. Been a little while, but I'm happy to be back.
I know it has been a while. Because I actually stopped the Independent Corner in 2016, I want to say. And then I started again on another channel. And then sometime in October, I think. So either I'm going to bring it on Podbean. I still haven't decided this, and this is probably something that should have already been decided. But, either do it in the, on Blog Talk Radio or on on Podbean. But we'll see. I haven't fully decided things yet because I've got a little bit of time to figure this stuff out, you know, as it goes. I procrastinate way too much. I'm sure most people can, especially actors, can kind of feel me on that at times. But
I think every creative is.
it's definitely a creative trait is procrastination. first of all, if you were to like introduce yourself to somebody about your acting career, how would you, Tina Grimm, introduce yourself?
Oh gosh, nobody's ever asked me that one before, so that's a good one. you caught me at a loss of words. I'm, you know, just me, Tina Grimm. I've been doing this now for a decade, and you know, I just trying to climb the ladder just like everybody else and hanging on when times get rough. I've started my acting career doing horror films back in Cleveland, Ohio, and then kind of branched out. I did a drama, and then I worked in New York City on another drama and came out here to LA and have been just chiseling away. So I'm definitely the struggling artist, but a lot of us are. It's a lot of hard work, but you just have to keep going for it because one of these days those doors will open. So I'm a very ambitious actor.
And let's talk about that real quick because I just watched some of it. I haven't finished. I'm going to finish it either tonight or tomorrow, depending on how late things go for me tonight. But I rented Joe's War, which everybody can rent on Amazon. I thought you did a wonderful job from what I've seen so far.
Thank you.
I'm pretty sure you're later, you know, but I've only got to the part where he has the flashback during the job interview. So I haven't gotten, and then the bar scene, I think, and stuff in the hockey. And then that's it. Like, literally, that was it.
Okay.
He was leaving the hockey
when
I had to
pause.
It's like 15 minutes or something. I've got an hour left of the movie.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for taking the time to rent that and watch it. And I encourage everybody out there to, not just because I acted and it was actually a really big role for me. I was the female lead in that. But it's just a really great film bringing awareness to PTSD and what our veterans go through when they come back from war. So definitely check it out. I do carry through the entire film, unlike a lot of the horror films that I've done in the past. Spoiler alert, I don't die. which is nice.
It's funny.
Compliment.
Yeah, it was funny because I was talking to an actress who's in the horror world. I don't want to say who or whatever, but they were like, "Oh, if you put me in that role, that'll be like the first movie I didn't die in," you know.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
I can.
It is a common thing. You know.
Oh yeah. Well, it is, but that's the great thing about the horror genre, though, too, is it's, you know, as morbid as it may sound, it actually is fun to die on screen because there's so many different ways you can do it, and everybody's in good spirits and laughing, and, you know, it's fake, and it's a lot of fun. I think I've been killed in so many different ways, I couldn't even tell you.
Well, that's always fun, though, like, especially seeing your death, because, you know, in real life, you'll never, ever be able to see our death, and I think that is a morbid reason for people to like the horror genre, or at least like acting in the horror genres, because they're able to play out your death. So, okay. So let's talk a little bit more about Joe's War, because it's more fresh in my mind right now and everything.
Sure.
It is a PTSD movie. It's a very dramatic. I wasn't surprised, because considering the subject matter, but I was like, whoa, you know, I was heavy-handed, and I liked it, like heavy movie, and I really, really enjoyed that. Without really spoiling too much, though, because it happens in the early beginning of the movie, it's not like, you know, this is something that's like huge plot point, but there is a point where he's like frustrated and everything, and he just can't get over the war and everything. You guys have your, I don't know if it's like a breakup or, you know, fight or whatever. Is it hard to get into that like frame of mind? Like, what do you do as an actor when you want to get into like a very dramatic place where you're like going to be yelling at somebody or you're going to be freaking out? Because a lot of people who are not actors may not realize kind of like it's, you know, you have some time to set up the shot. They have to light the scene. They have to put the camera over the shoulder or something. So there's a lot of time where, you know, there's some space. What do you do in that time and space? Do you kind of just go into your own world, or do you kind of like, does something help you to get angry? Or what do you do?
Yeah, what I do, and it's different for every actor. I use one of the common acting techniques, that's substitution. So what you do is you pull something from your real life experience, and you kind of trick yourself into putting that person or experience into what you have to act into. So for that specific scene, you know, when we had the big blow up and the big fight, I actually thought back to a relationship that I was in real life, just to kind of pull a lot of that frustration and that anger. And so when I stepped in front of the camera to do the scene, I was actually envisioning, as silly as it may sound, instead of actually seeing Mike, my co-star, I would see, I won't say his name, but see somebody else. Just to really get into that moment. Now, with like downtime, with them like setting up the shots and the lighting and stuff, we're able to step off set, and usually somebody will come in and get us when they're ready for the shot. And I kind of just sit in a corner. I know a lot of people will do other stuff and read books or, you know, play with their phones or what have you. But for me, especially in a very intense scene like that, I will kind of drift away from the noise and just kind of just sit and replay that moment over and over and over in my head. A lot of times they call us actors, you know, we're living in our own madness, and essentially kind of you are, because you're playing with your emotions and you're tricking yourself to pull as real of an act out as you possibly can to portray that. So for that scene, when we get into the fight, I would literally sit in the corner kind of like a kid in time out and just be really down. And sometimes people would see me and they would be like, Christina, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Now, I wouldn't call myself a method actor by any means, but I do try to get into that moment psychologically. So when I'm ready, I'm like, okay, this is the person that I'm going to be confronting. It's not actually the actor per se, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's a great way to look at it. Laura just called in, so let me bring her into this discussion.
Sure.
Laura, just be on.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
We can hear you.
Oh, okay, perfect. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good.
Great.
Thank you. How are you?
I am good. I'm shooting a feature this week, and I don't know if John has mentioned it before I called in, but I literally just finished for the day on our second day of filming. We literally just started filming. We're going for 12 days. So it's a long process,
nice.
But yeah. So I finished at the space, and I drove back and got in and grabbed a snack, and I'm calling in and talking to you guys. This is great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice to meet you guys.
It's good that you're able to do that, Laura, because I wasn't even sure if you're going to be able to make it today, because I was like, oh, crap, she's going to be on a shoot. I don't even know if you're going to be shooting at that time or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we start our call time basically for all the days is 6 in the morning. So we start early, so then we end early, kind of thing. And we're the first few days we were in Joshua Tree, and then now these next 12 days are in a soundstage in Burbank. So we have we're using the film set from I'm drawing a blank here from Serenity. Have you guys seen that film, Serenity or Firefly, the show?
Wow,
yeah.
So we're using that actual set, and we, like, reconfigured it a little bit to our needs and our film and what we're doing. And everyone's been so nice and letting us use that set and all that stuff. So it's been such a really fantastic process, and to kind of be on a set of a show that I really enjoyed watching growing up and kind of walking around in that environment. And it really, speaking of, because I kind of heard your last little thing about kind of feeling the character and being the character, not fully method, but kind of like being in the moment. And one thing about, you know, being an actor and finding that set and being on that set is it helps you get through that, and it helps you see that and do all those things. And that's one thing that I really enjoy about actually having the opportunity to be on a professional soundstage and be in that environment. Pretty cool.
It's such a wonderful, amazing experience. It's such a great feeling.
Yeah.
Tina, you were on a pilot once that I think was it John Turteltaub worked on or something. And you were telling me before about the set was pretty awesome too, right? If I'm correct.
Yeah, I've been on, it was actually the Orville with Seth MacFarlane was the pilot episode of that one at Fox. This set was massive, and it was incredible. But I didn't think one would actually beat that, but I worked 3 months on Captain Marvel back in April, and the sets that they did for that was just, I was a kid in a candy store. I mean, I'm a huge sci-fi comic nerd to begin with, and just to be on something that's that big is, I had to like pinch myself every day.
I thought it was the Orville, but I wasn't sure. And I know, like just you talking about that, like, cause she's on a space, you know, movie. Is it a movie, Laura, or is it a TV show?
What I'm working on right now?
Yes.
It's a feature film.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So you're on a feature sci-fi film And, you know, those sets are pretty cool. But, also being on a TV show, like, especially if it were continuous, you know, that would be, you know what I mean? Like, kind of a cool situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like, absolutely. I feel like nowadays, with all the saturation going on with films, the best bet for actors is to be on a television show, one, because of the consistency, but two, because you can gain that growth as a character through that, you know what I mean? And kind of feeling that vibe. And so it's very rare, you know, when you get those projects and when you get those shows, it's kind of like, you really want to hold on to it, but also you never know what the writers are going to do either. You know, because if people, nowadays, it's like if people really love you, they're going to kill you off. You know?
Yeah.
They want to be really extreme, you know? Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things, I don't really want people to love me that much, but I want them to like me. You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to do an okay job.
Right? Because, like, to go back to Firefly, or Serenity, they killed off like a bunch of people, you know, or whatever, three people at least that were the big integral part of the show. You know, I know like and it shocked people, you know, when they saw it, you know, because and devastated them, you know. And I bet it devastated the people who had to go and look and say, oh man, I gotta die. I mean, I'm going to be back for, like, the sequel, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But then it goes to, like, it's the reason as, like, writers write that is for people to go, oh, crap, they killed off these people. Anybody can die, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't know who's next.
Yeah, it's the shock factor that really draws audiences in.
Exactly.
Yeah, keeps them going. It keeps them guessing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Laura,
exactly.
Do you have any questions to start off with for Tina? Since I know I wanted to wait till you were here to get into the SAG questions because, Laura wants to just, we've been talking about wanting to talk about SAG on the show and stuff. And I don't think we've done that yet. So, that was one of the things we were interested in doing. And I was like, well, perfect, because Tina is in SAG, and she's, you've been a SAG member for how many years?
4 years now.
4 years now. So, wonderful. So, do you have any questions right now, Laura?
Well, I wanted to get into the whole, I'm lost about this whole thing because long story short, I've been holding back with joining the union because, you know, we hear crazy stories like on and off, like bad, good on both ways. And every time, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm ready. I'm going to do it. And this project that I'm working on, this will be my second, my third SAG feature, actually, where I'm a lead in. And this one, they're actually, you know, they're doing all the everything right and the paperwork right, where I can, like, you know, I've saved up my money. I can join immediately, all these things. And it's one of those things where, you know, I get to those moments where I can join, and then all these questions start popping up. Like, all these people start telling me, no, don't join SAG right now. Like, it's just so difficult. It's hard to get jobs. But here's my question. When you're somebody, where me and you are very similar, where I've done a little bit of your background, where you have did a lot of work, non-union and SAG now because you're SAG. Is it, like, with me, I've done so many films now, non-union, that are, in the horror industry, kind of fairly being talked about and being seen and things like that. And it isn't like I look back at my scenes and I'm like, okay, they're good, they're decent. So I'm like, okay, I have a decent reel, I have decent projects, I have decent work, I have a theater background, I toured, traveled, and done all those things. So I have a really big resume. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, is it, when it comes to SAG, is it better to have that pre you know, that pre-reel, that pre-resume, all those things that I've been working on. Because that's one of the things people have told me, they're like, don't join SAG if you haven't really done anything. Like if you know, you do all the background work and then you join, it's like, okay, of course it's going to be hard to get those major roles, those paying roles. And so
right.
I guess my official question would be, I guess the truth within that, like, when is a good time to join SAG, and would it be a good time for me to join now in my situation with having all these things already out and being seen and on Hulu and on Netflix and all this stuff? So, yeah, I don't know. Just tell me your process and what works for you and what you think, and maybe if you wanted to do anything differently with yourself or things like that, and it might help me, and me and Jonathan can kind of ask questions as we go. And this is good for people listening because, oh, I know a lot of people are really struggling with this decision.
Yeah, it's a common battle. Like, do I join SAG or do I not join SAG? And listening to what you've been saying, it's funny because it's almost exactly like what I did. I knew I wanted to be an actor. I knew SAG is to join is just a ridiculous amount of money, and so I would set money aside and save. And so when I was eligible, I was just able to write that check and make that payment and be done with it. As hurtful as it was to say goodbye to $3,000, it was there. I didn't have to worry about it. But I did. I was in the business for 6 years before I did end up joining. So the same thing. I was on a lot of features, been in a lot of films that went to different film festivals, got recognition, built up a semi-decent acting reel that's completely outdated now. But at the time, you know, it was good. My resume was really, really big.
Right.
And yeah, I was at the crossroads too. I didn't know what to do because so many people were telling me the same thing. Don't do it. You're not going to get any work. You're going to have to start from the bottom. It's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. But then I started talking to some of my other actor friends who were actually being very successful in the business. Now, not your average, I'm going to flip on the channel and see you and know who you are success, but they were able to pay their bills and continue to climb up that ladder in a very positive manner. And they told me, they're like, you have to look at it as, what do I really want to do for my career? Do I genuinely, seriously want to pursue acting as my lifelong career? And I'm like,
right.
Well, yeah. And they said, if that's truly your passion and what you want to do, then definitely join SAG. Because anything big that you want to get to expand your horizons and to take that final step up is a union project. Now, a lot of commercials, there's this big thing going on now in the union that's been going on for months about how a lot of commercials have gone to non-union because it's cheaper, and they're really fighting on that and getting things back to SAG. But
right.
My suggestion would definitely be, if this is truly what you want to do, then take that leap of faith and join. Work is going to subside. It's actually been a while since I've done anything of big substance. I've usually been doing behind the camera stuff just to keep my union pension and stuff like that going. So it is tough, and it is hard because, you know, I can't just jump on an indie film because the majority of them are non-union. Because, I mean, I could do it. I know a lot of people that do it, but then you're taking a gamble of getting penalized and getting kicked out of the union. And
right.
Why jeopardize something that you've worked so hard for just to get some screen time?
Right.
So it's worth it. It will be a struggle, and there will be days where you're like, well, come on, you know, I've gone on all these auditions and nothing's biting. But it's the same when you're not in the union, though. And I just think that it makes you work harder to really fight for what you want. So definitely do it.
Yeah. And I think also, and thank you for that. I also want to put in there, like, I also have been, you know, doing all my research and asking a bunch of people that I know, and they do say it does help. Also, if you have people like, agents and managers that will fight for you too once you join.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a person I was talking to last night, about this specifically is, you know, she was like, yeah, you know, I kind of the same thing. She was scared or whatever, but her agent, and this is happening to me now, I have an agent in Canada, and she has told me, she's like, you know, I see potential in you, and I can't do much for you right now. I'm getting all these union gigs sent to me, and I can't send for you because you're not SAG yet. And she's like, you know, once you do to make that transition, let me know, and I'll push for you. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you can join SAG, sure, but it probably helps you out even more if you had somebody that's, like, pushing for you and your union, because that just is the double, you know, and it's like it gets you, okay, well, she's union, she's SAG, and this person is backing her. She might be somewhat good. Okay, I'll look at her reel. Okay, I'll look at, you know, it gets people talking at least, and I think that's the goal for any performer. Like, you at least want people talking about you, reaching out, and wanting to see more of your work. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, I got a good background, and Jonathan, he's been great, and he's been so helpful with me as well, and so supportive of me, and we're, like, been a good team here. And I'm like, okay, well, that's what you need. You know, you need teams. You need people, like, you know, a good group where you're like, fuck it, let's fight for this and make it happen. And me and Jonathan have been so back and forth together, because it's like my decision is also his decision, and because we're doing this kind of like a couple thing, because Jonathan's helping manage me, and I'm like, all right, well, let's try to make that decision a good decision together, and let's just go for it. Any information is helpful. Like, and to everyone listening, to anyone listening, it's exactly that. Like, what she was saying, you know, you have to be ready for the fight. And if you're not doing the fight, the audition fight, quote unquote, now being non-union, then you're not ready for the SAG. Like, I will say to people out there, I'm auditioning or sending in for auditions almost every night. And it's a job. You know, yeah, I have to pay my bills, but, like, every night I make sure I'm doing some sort of, like, either sending my stuff into people, or I've gotten called back and I'm sending in video auditions. And it's at least a couple times a week now. And every night I'm sending things in, I'm posting things in. And you, if you're not doing that now as a non-union member, then you're definitely not ready for SAG, because for SAG you definitely have to do that. Otherwise you're probably like you were saying, Tina, you're not going to get those auditions. If you don't put the grind in, you're not going to get that work.
Yeah. It's always a constant hustle. I mean, it really is. And I can't tell you how many people that I've been on sets with too, that have asked, you know, the obligatory question of SAG or no SAG. And then they have no idea what they even need to do to become SAG, but they're so set on being in the union. And for me, I always bring up the question, well, is this really what you want to do for your lifelong career? Because if it's not, it's not worth the dedication. It's not worth the financial, the finances that you have to put into it. It's just, it's not worth it if your heart's not in it. Because there's so many people out there that think, okay, I'm going to go SAG, and I'm going to get on a Netflix show, or I'm going to be, you know, the next leading lady in a comic book movie, it's not that way. I mean, you're going to join the union, and there are a few that will get lucky and get that part that will launch them out there. But a lot of times that grind is just going to keep going and going and going. And then yes, eventually that door will open. Statistically, it will happen if you just keep grinding for it.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Very well said. Yeah, because I also, you know, it's one of those things, like, I'm sure we all know, you know, or have been friends or have an acquaintance that was that lucky one. Like, I have a few acquaintances of mine from college that were those lucky ones. And shout out to Katrina Cunningham, college student that I was in class with. She's on the Deuce now, recurring role, and she was recently chatting about how, you know, she said it was the shortest audition of her life. She went in and she literally said two lines, and it was one of those things where it was like, now she's playing James Franco's wife in The Deuce, his character. And it was one of those things where it just clicked, and she also kind of, like, knew people, too, that helped kind of, like, talk her up and say, you know, she's a hard worker and this, that, and the other. So it's very much, like, also, like, your rapport, like, who you're working with, how you're working, if you're doing a good job, all these things amount to when you join and how and who, because they're going to, people ask around. It's definitely, it's like any other job, you know. It's, they're going to find out information, so you better be doing your stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. So, so when you join, when did you join, how long have you been a part of the union?
For 4 years, I actually, when I've been in LA now for 4.5 years, and I told myself when I made the move from Cleveland to California that within, I gave myself annual goals. And I said, for the first year, I want to get an agent and I want to become sex. And I was setting the bar pretty high, but I'd rather overshoot than undershoot to really give myself something to work for. And after 6 months, I got both. I got an agent, and I was able to join the union. And I've since switched agents, and I'm now looking for another one, but that's a never-ending cycle of finding the right fit.
exactly.
I was able to join, and it was, like, going back to what you said about just, like, word of mouth and talking to people, because that's so important, especially in this business. Because a lot of times you don't even need to file through castings or what have you. A lot of times you'll know somebody who knows somebody and, like, hey, you know, I got this project going on and I think you'd be a great fit. And, you know, it just kind of all trickles down. And that kind of happened for me when I wanted to join the union. My neighbor had his brother was an actor, and we were talking, and I told him that I've been wanting to do this and was ready to join SAG, but didn't quite able to get eligible yet. And he was like, oh, well, my friend has a web series. Let me talk to her. We'll get you on it. And you get Taft Hartley. And I heard all the time about, you know, people getting lucky and doing that. And so that's kind of how my story went. To join the union. But as soon as that paperwork went through, I went straight down to the SAG office, filled out my paperwork, wrote that $3,000 check, and waited to get my card in the mail.
Yeah.
And it was just such an amazing feeling, too, when that card came in the mail. It took a few weeks. I mean, it took a good, say, month or so to actually get the paperwork to be able to take down to the SAG office. But it only took, like, a couple weeks to get my card. But it was such an accomplishment because I worked so hard for it, even though it was kind of a crapshoot on being able to become eligible. I had worked 6 years prior to that, busting my butt, you know, doing all of that. And then finally, the glorious moment, like, oh, my gosh, I got this. It's totally worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of like where I'm at now, where, you know, when I get all this stuff done, I'm like, okay, well, you know, because it is that fight. I've been fighting battle for like a few years now, whether or not to join. I'm like, I feel like it'll be that moment for me. Like when I do, it will probably feel right, and I'll probably be like, oh yeah, I should have done this a while ago. But, you know, it's one of those things where you always want to do your triple checks, you know, your quadruple checks. And I have been able to work with great people here in Los Angeles and San Francisco because of it, you know, because of those decisions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know. It's like you said, it's like you meet people too. You might meet someone that more and more people I'm meeting now are production people. They ask me, they're like, are you union? Are you union yet? Like, I could totally get you on, but you have to be union. I'm like, you know, it's one of those things. Like, you never know. It's like, you just want to be ready because, you do want those union gigs. Because those union gigs obviously are higher quality, higher budget, higher everything. So, you know,
Well, and another thing, too. what was that?
Oh, no,
go
no,
ahead,
go
John.
Ahead. Don't go ahead, Dana.
Oh, okay, sorry. I didn't mean to overstep anybody. But what I was going to say is another thing. There will come a point, too, that if you don't join but you keep working union projects, that eventually, and I don't know the number or the time frame, but you'll get a letter in the mail that says that you're a must join.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you'll have to join, because if you keep working unions and you're non-union, the production will get fined. And there's a bunch of other stuff, too. So it's kind of like, well, if I'm at that point where, you know, I kind of have to join anyway, or, you know, I want to join, but I could play it out a little bit until I have to join. It's like, why prolong it? If it's something that you know that you deep down inside want to do, don't procrastinate on it and just do it. Like I said, take that leap and just go with it, especially if you've saved up the money for the dues. It's worth it.
Oh, yeah, I've been saving up forever. Like, it's been a nightmare, but, like, the past, like, it's taking me 2 years to save up the $3,000, because obviously I needed to save up more than that, you know, to survive. But yeah, you know, and a lot of people don't realize how much it really is. But, you know, I did. Mm-hmm. I asked my boyfriend, because he's in, like, the actual, like, electricians union, and he said, no, it's the same. He's like, we pay $3,000. We pay $3,000 a year, every year, to be in the union. But because they're in the union, they get all these benefits. And they get, you know, this, that, and the other. And it all goes hand in hand. You know, you're paying to make sure you're treated okay. And that's the whole point, you know. Yeah.
Right. Well,
also,
I wanted
to mention. Oh, go ahead, Tina.
Oh, I was just going to say, in comparison to, like, the Actors Guild, you pay the $3,000 and you're done, which I'm sure you already know. And then you just have to pay your quarterly dues, which I think is, like, can't remember if it's two or three times a year, and then that's just an average. It's like an average of what you work. I forget what the percentage is. Mine usually is about a couple $100 every few months, which isn't bad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
What I wanted to say was, like, with the union, from what I can understand, because I'm not part of the union or anything, but what I've kind of understood is, like, when you're on a set for a union film, and you're a union member, you get a lot more stuff that a non-union member would get. Like, they have to pay you a certain amount. They have to, you know, you have to get, per diems. You have to get all these certain things that me as a filmmaker and producer, if I went I did SAG. You know, I acted in a SAG movie, which was Plan 9, the remake to Plan 9 from Outer Space, and I was just a zombie or whatever, and I got nothing. I didn't get paid, didn't get nothing, you know, right? But I'm sure, like, the people that were SAG members that were on that set got paid with, you know, all the great things that they needed to get paid, because otherwise the producers get fined. You know, and everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they're taking care of the right way, you know, or those SAG members are not taking care of the right way, I mean, SAG can be called. I mean, we know this from a lot of, a lot of stories of people getting their, movies or TV shows or whatever shut down when they don't, you know, abide by the union rules.
I totally
agree that it's worth it if you want to get, like, you know, kind of respected more as a professional. However, it also, you know, being on a SAG project sometimes can get, you know, things can get pretty crazy if something goes too long, or, you know, like a set goes too long, or things aren't met up to the standards of the union.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've never been on a project that has been horribly bad. I was on a Nick Cannon show one time where I could have been the person to call a SAG rep to complain. It's just, there was so much things that they were trying to sweep under the rug, just with where we had to park. And then our shuttles were literally pickup trucks, and it just blew my mind. I'd never been on a union project that was that for lack of better words, ghetto. but everything worked out and it was fine. But as for like working long days, for me, it's like, bring it, because our overtime is awesome, which is really great. The longer you stay, the more money you make, which is, you know, for any job, but being in the union, it's definitely after 10 hours, it's double pay. Double an hour, which is great. And, you know, just also like the health benefits are really good too. Once you qualify for that, they have really great insurance, and then your pension is good when it accumulates, and retirement and all that stuff. It's just, it's worth it. I mean, that $3,000 not only gets you that card that's like, hey, I'm a professional now, but it really does, you know, protect you on a lot of things. And you can go down to the SAG office or even call them on the phone. They're always there to help you. Like if you have a contract and you don't quite understand it and you don't really want to call production because you don't want to question something through them and make you know, kind of feel bad. You can just call SAG and be like, hey, you know, I just want to run this by you to make sure that it's legit or I'm not getting shorthanded or anything like that. And it's great. It really is great.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good. So have you been getting stuff that you're happy with since you joined and things like that? Do you feel like you are progressing and doing things you've been wanting to do?
I do. Things have kind of slowed down for me a little bit just because the cost of living in LA is insane, and I have a daughter, so I'm a single parent. I mean, I've been engaged for 2 years, so I do have somebody to help now, which is nice, but he's also a fellow single parent, so it's been tough. I've kind of had to put some things on the back burner only because I have to survive, but I definitely have progressed for sure. One thing that I am lacking though is a good team, because like you mentioned, you have a bunch of people in your corner that support you and are willing to help get you out there, and I haven't quite found that fit yet for me. But I think that once I do, things will definitely progress a lot faster. But I'm still happy being out here. I'm still doing it and doing what I can and still climbing that ladder.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
And if anything ever, if I join SAG and if anything does open up for me and they say, hey, we're looking for, if you're still blonde, I'd be like, if they're looking for a tall, blonde, beautiful female, I'd be like, yep, I know the exact girl.
That's awesome. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And likewise, same here. Because, you know, I truly believe in artists helping artists. I do. You know, we're all in this crazy adventure together. And, you know, I love working together with good people and helping everyone elevate to the next level.
Yeah, for sure. I'm all about that. It's one of those things where I do get a little, let down when I see people that were once, I was really close to once, and they kind of, you know, thought they may have gotten, like, a better job than me, so then they're better than me, and then they move on, and then, like, they have this weird attitude that they're better than everyone else, so they have, like, all these new friends that apparently are better friends, you know, like, I was part of that, like, it's like, you know, that a lot of my friends were that, and it's kind of like, I would never do that. Like, I don't think I would ever, and I always tell my friends nowadays, and my boyfriend, I tell him, I'm like, if I ever get that way, please slap me in the face and wake me up, you know, because I always want to be that person that, like, just tries to pull everyone in, you know, and if I'm not doing that, then what is living, you know, what is life, you know, so it's kind of like, we want to do what we love. We want to do all this hard stuff. We want to get through the hard shit, but we also want to make sure we keep our friends and our families close and have that there and that balance. So it's one of those things to keep that balance.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So.
Yeah, now that I know you're in LA, I'm like, okay, cool, connection.
Hang out. Well, it's funny that you said you're going to be shooting in Burbank, because I live in Burbank.
Oh, nice, perfect. Well, yeah. If you want to hang out this week and grab a coffee or something, get a hold of me.
All right.
I know both of you. I've known Tina for years. I don't know. Mm-hmm. How long has it been? Like 5, 4 years, something like that.
It's been longer than that because I've been in LA for 4.5 years. So it's been.
Yeah, I knew you before then. So it's been a long time. Jeez. So
yeah,
I've known Tina for a long time, and we've never met. You know, just like I've never met you, Laura. So I'm like, whenever I go to LA, I'm gonna like have like a million people to go see. and I introduced Laura to all my friends who have had on my show that live out there, like Jackie and Morgan. Who Tina knows too because of the Independent Corner show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really great that I'm able to have the connection with all these awesome people. But unfortunately, I live out here, so in Virginia, mm-hmm. so it really does not do me any good for that. Like I need to eventually one day move out there so I can at least be with all my peeps.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Continually work.
You
should. That'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You need to come out here. Well, you know, one of these days, Jonathan, you will. And then, look, you know all these people. You're just going to have all these friends as soon as you move out here. It's insane.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be so popular. Everyone's going to want to hang out with you. You're going to be so busy.
We'll
I won't even be able to get a hold of you.
We'll do some work. We'll actually get, because Tina and I were going to write something together that we were working on before. I don't know if we ever we finished the draft of it, which was Man Cave, the pilot for it. And so we're supposed to work eventually on that, but I have not been, I've been concentrating on doing all my horror stuff right now. And eventually I want to get back to doing that comedy because that would be a lot of fun.
Well, Jonathan, I'd like to make a statement there. You know, all of us aren't getting any younger. Just putting that out. I always tell myself that whenever, I always tell myself, oh, I'll do that later. I'm like, well, how much later? Because I'm not getting any younger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Pretty soon I'll have to, give other parts to other people, just because we're just not going to be the same age. Or make the characters older, to make it work.
Well, it's funny because I was actually thinking about that very same thing today because I think you remember the rom-com that I wrote, Story of a Girl, Jonathan? That resurfaced today and I'm thinking, oh dear God, I wrote this thing, but it's like, I got to really push through because if I wait any longer, I'm not even going to be able to play this character or... it's kind of a situation where I can't really age the characters because of the context of the story. So
right.
It's like, damn it.
Damn, you don't
yeah,
want to rewrite
funny.
The story.
yeah. I recently, my agent recently got me a gig from Canada. She got me a gig in San Francisco last week, and it was to be a part of an English book, to learn the English language for China. This guy wrote this book, okay? And so they have these videos that come with the book, and there's girls that are girls, because I was the girl, that would tell the story in English that they're learning, right? So they hear the sound of the words. And so she got me this gig, and so I'm supposed to be, kind of late high school, early college, young college, and that's usually everything I get hired for, which is kind of funny in the professional world. And and I've already graduated from college, so I'm obviously older than that. But it's funny because he called me to talk with me. It was a direct booking, and he goes, oh, let's Skype and we can chat and rehearse the lines. And he goes, yeah, I needed a girl that is in high school, and, you know, like freshman in college, and your agent said that, you know, you're in your mid 20s, and I looked at your photo, and I was like, oh, she's not in her mid 20s. She'll definitely work. You know, like old, senior in high school, freshman in college. I'm like, okay, well, that's good. I made a joke. I go, well, in a few years, that may not work anymore. You know, like, I'm going to be a stone. You know, like, I'm going to shrivel up and die. Yeah. I'm going to go from playing, like, the 20s to, like, the 40s. Like, there's not going to be an in-between.
Yeah.
And so I made the joke. I was like, hey, I'll take it. If you're putting me in high school, I'll take the gig. Because those aren't going to last me much longer. I have maybe like a couple more years left of high school and freshman and college roles, you know. Got to keep wearing my mask at night, like tighten my face up.
I remember I wrote a movie script, I started writing it, and then another friend came in and rewrote it, and then, or not rewrote it, but like helped write it, and then co-wrote it with me, and then I asked her to be the director of it, and the biggest stipulation was that I was going to play one of the characters in it that's in college, and she ended up casting somebody else without telling me, of course, and so I was like frustrated, like, what the hell?
Yeah,
and her biggest
thing
was
like,
Jonathan, you're in your 30s, you're not going to be able to play, a 20-year-old anymore. And I was upset. I was like, are you saying that I can't play like I'm in my, like, people are telling me, you know, that I look like I'm 25, and now you're telling me that I look my age, you know, right? I got all frustrated in that, but.
Well, another friend of mine, not really a friend, again, acquaintance from college, he got the lead role in The Magicians on Sci-Fi. He was obviously like a senior when I was a freshman or something like that, but he was already older than me. And so when I saw the Magicians, his role, really, you know, in college, right, they get accepted into this magician college. So he's supposed to be playing maybe the oldest at the start of the show, 19, 20 years old. Well, I've watched the show and I look at his face and I'm like, wait a minute, that's so-and-so from da-da-da. I was like, how is he playing? He's like 30 at the time the show came out, you know? And there's a lot of shows out there that do that. So it's interesting that this girl did that to you, Jonathan, because honestly, it's so funny because I find in the indie film world, they don't get that. Like, they're like, oh, you're in your 30s, so you can't play. I was like, do you realize that people in the, like, universe of, like, you know, major motion pictures or shows, they hire older people because they know what the fuck they're doing and they're not messing around on set. Like, they'd rather hire the 30-year-olds if they can look somewhat, you know, 20 versus the 20-year-old, because the 20-year-old is going to get drunk and not show up on time and you know, it's going to go to their head and they're going to get a big ego. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. It's weird. I'm fighting for you, Jonathan.
and a lot of people forget, like, the entire cast of 90210, and I'm totally dating myself, but they all were, like, in their, mid to late 20s, and they played high schoolers. So,
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know,
yeah.
They were
Saved by the Bell. Saved by the Bell was another one.
Yeah.
Vampire Diaries. Any show. I guess Vampire Diaries works because most of them are vampires.
But still, like, you have Ian Somerhalder, who was like 35, pretending like he's a non-aged 19-year-old. I mean, maybe 19-year-old dude, 22, maybe.
Right.
But you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you. This is why a lot of people, and this is going to go for, you know, if I have kids, and you already have kids too, this is good for your children. Is where they're going to watch these shows, And they're going to go, oh, especially men. They're going to watch this show and they're going to go, I have to have a beard in high school? I have to have pecs and chest hair in high school? No, that is not real. That guy is 30 years old. Nobody in high school has, like, chest hair and, like, beard down to their fucking nipples, you know? Nobody. That's just the film. people are watching that, and and even females, too. They're like, oh, my gosh, like, she's well endowed. She looks beautiful. And the way they make girls look in high school nowadays on shows, I don't even look like that now. And that's why I think people think I'm really young because, you know, I don't put that much makeup on. I'm very natural. My hair is natural. My eyebrows are natural. Like, so I still look like a kid compared to these girls that everything is fake. You know, they put the thick makeup on. They put the eyelashes on, you know. And it's so funny because, like, I teach dance part-time. And this one girl I'd say all of them one time at this place I was teaching at. I won't name the name. But all these girls walk in, they all have hair extensions, fake nails, eyelashes, full makeup in dance class. And I'm like, girls, do you realize you're about to sweat all that off? Like, why are you coming to class fully done up? And it's so funny because it's the shows they're watching. They think they need to look that way. And when we were kids, it was Boy Meets World. And, you know, everything was more kid-like, and nowadays it's not. It's not like that anymore. No, it's not.
No. And that's the thing. That's kind of interesting, and I like your thought on it, Laura, where it is because, or was it Tina? I'm trying to remember who said it exactly, but that is the 20-year-old is going to mess up and get drunk on set or whatever, or not show up on time, be like a recluse, but the 30-year-old actually knows, is more adult and will be there on time and will treat this professionally. Yeah. And it just, you know, that's why, I mean, since this is almost October and everything and Halloween, but like movie horror films of like the 90s and everything, like say Scream, for instance. I mean, how old was Neve Campbell playing a high schooler? You know, I mean, it's just crazy, you know, that's the way it is in Hollywood. And then indie films are like, And it's not just my friend who said that, but like a lot of people have said this stuff is like, oh, you look like you're too old to play that role, and everything. Does it really matter, you know, like these days? Like,
right. Exactly. Yeah, I think that's where the acting also comes into play too. Like these indie films are like, oh, we need the age. Mm-hmm. They're so worried about the age that they're not worried about the actual performance. You get a lot of these B movies where you watch them and you're going, why did they hire that real 16-year-old girl that doesn't know what the hell she's doing? You know, she's not even reading the line. You know, she is reading the lines on camera. Like, you know, like she's not performing at all. Like, and it's very obvious, and that's where it goes like, and that's where you want to get older too. You're going to get the performance out of them. You know, older people, obviously, we're like fine wine, you know, like we just get better with age. So,
absolutely. Well, and I have a prime example of that situation, too. And it was years ago. This was before I was with SAG. So it was in an indie film. And I had self-tape auditioned for it and got the call back. And it was just a Skype face-to-face after the callback. And I don't even remember the premise of the character or whatever, but I just know that the character was supposed to be 23. I was 28 at the time. But I had slowly fading, but I still had like a pretty wide portrayable age range. And so I went ahead and submitted it. And obviously it was believable enough to get the call back and then the face to face. And this guy was so adamant about actually having somebody that was 23 years old. He wanted to see proof of my birth date. He wanted to see my driver's license and all this other stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to show that to you. And I'll flat out tell you, I'm not 23. I'm 28. He's like, well, then why are you wasting my time? I said, well, clearly you thought that I could play it from the audition, so why are you wasting my time by calling me back and telling me now that you won't cast me because I'm not actually 23? Like, it didn't make sense, and it's just, it blows my mind because why, it's just so many people out there in the indie film industry that just have this tunnel vision that they have to have that specific age, and it's ridiculous. It's like,
yeah,
hello,
it
you're
is.
Hiring an actor. That's what actors do. They play something they're not.
Exactly. And, yeah, and I don't even think they're even aware how much Hollywood fucks with that age. You know, you're not aware of it unless you, like, kind of, like me, you know, I was doing research, and I started researching all these people from films and how old they were in the films or the shows. You know, I think there was a show, I think it's Malcolm in the Middle or something, I don't know, the older sister. In real life, she's 34, and she plays a 16-year-old girl. No joke.
Hannah Montana.
Plays a 16-year-old. Hannah Montana was another one.
Like the boy in Hannah Montana, the brother in Hannah Montana, was in his 30s, and he was playing like a 16-year-old or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but he looked like he was 16. He had some kind of, I think he had some kind of age, like there was some kind of deformity kind of thing or something where he was always going to look young, you know, or whatever, than he actually did. But he...
Well, this girl, she didn't have a deformity for a girl for the show. She just, I mean, they just, you know, when you, but, you know, if you put something in front of people and you go, this girl is seven, like, watch this person. This is her role. This is a 17-year-old. People will believe it until they look that person up. And because people are gullible. And it's just, it goes exactly that. I completely agree. It's people in the independent world are not, I feel like that's where a lot of us actors are being held back and not being able to work because they are set in that. Like, I don't put my age when people ask, because they'll do. They'll ask, they'll put, please slate your name and your age and your character. Well, I never put my age, ever. I never put it. And you know what? If they don't want to call me back because of it, that's fine. I don't want to work with them then. You know?
Yeah.
Because that means they're a certain type of person. They're not open-minded. So, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm getting all, like, fired up by this.
That's great.
I feel it.
That's all I hear. Well, let's go back to some more stuff with Tina.
We're done with that. We want to know about you before we leave tonight, and all your stuff and your endeavors.
So what have you been up to lately, Tina?
Well, lately, pretty much auditioning. I mean, the last major thing that I worked on was behind the camera stuff, actually. I did photo doubling for Brie Larson on Captain Marvel for 3 months.
That's nice.
So, that's another thing, too. Like, it's hard for an on-camera actor to take work when you're off-camera behind the scenes. But on the other hand, it's good, especially in being on such a big project like that, because you're around such a big professional crew. And, you know, I got to work with an Oscar-winning actress every single day. So in a sense, it was a free education for me. And so that was such a ride. I worked on that. Actually, it started in March, and we went through July. So it was a nice run on that. And then I kind of had to get back to the family life because I was essentially gone for 3 months, even though they shot here in LA for most of it. And so now I'm just kind of getting back into the grind, between just submitting. I'm not fortunate enough to have a couple of auditions a day or whatever, but I have a couple a week, which is nice. And I'm just, you know, keeping it going.
That's great.
Awesome. You know, I never told you, I don't think, Tina, and I don't know if I've shared this on this show or not, but I feel like I can now because it's been a while and the movie's out and stuff. But there was a movie called Imperium Daniel Radcliffe is in. And so I was really excited because there was a call for extras for like, and there's like this like neo-Nazi rally or whatever at, you know, in Richmond or whatever for the movie and stuff. And they were looking for people who were willing to shave their heads. And I was like, screw it, I'll shave my head and be a, you know, be an extra in or be in a Radcliffe movie. So I sent in my resume, and the casting director sent me back an email, or I don't know if it's, I think it was the casting director himself, but he sent me back a thing, and he was like, wow, your resume is, because he looked at my IMDb, and I think I might have sent actually my in my resume, but he was like, you've done a lot of work, we don't really need you for an extra like that, but how would you like to be Daniel Radcliffe's stand-in? And I was like, holy crap, like, that would be awesome. I love that. And so I gave, you know, they said, you're a little, you're an inch shorter than him, but I think we could still make that work, right? And I was like, awesome. I was, you know, right? I was really excited. And then I didn't hear back from him ever again. And I was really disappointed. And I hit up my agent to find out what was going on. And I guess they had found someone, which was probably his, whoever he has as his stand-in, generally. You know, they probably flew his professional stand-in out. But the thing I got really mad about was the fact that I never got an email back, you know, like at all. Like, and I sent emails asking, you know, I said, you know, is the, you know, is this still happening? And then I sent another email asking, is there, you know, is extra roles still available, you know? And, you know, like, I was willing to do that, but, you know, they never hit me back up. And I got kind of, you know, kind of pissed, you know? Like, I was like, I like, I'm not one to turn down being an extra in a movie, you know? Like, or anything, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be happy for that opportunity. It would have been nice to be the stand-in, but, you know, I mean, that's not what I want to do, you know, generally. So I know you said you were a photo double, so it's almost kind of like a stand-in in a way. A photo stand-in, basically.
No, what a photo double does is say, I mean, I was her stand-in as well, but what the photo double does is when they need insert shots of certain things that they don't necessarily need the actor or actress for, like close-ups on hands or feet or anything where the face isn't recognizable, they use a photo double who's essentially same shape and size to act it out for them so that they can focus on another scene where they could take the day off or what have you. So it's essentially like a body double.
Okay.
Okay, well.
Yeah, there's so many different, like, things with that, you know, the body double thing.
Right. Well, my big thing is for actors, do you think, like, that is because if they can't get, like, a job as an actor, being a photo double or being a stand-in or something is a good job for somebody who's a SAG member, or do you think, like, how do you feel about that yourself, Tina?
It boils down to personal preference. For me, any day on set is a blessing, whether it be if I'm in front of the camera speaking lines or if I'm essentially somebody's body double or stand-in behind the camera measuring lights. It doesn't hurt my ego to do other stuff like that because I'm still in the union and because I'm on set. So I'm still gaining all the perks. The pay is still better than things that aren't non-union. I'm building up my resume. I'm building up my network of people. It's a little deflating because, yes, everybody who's pursuing acting wants to actually be in front of the camera. But for me, like I said, every day on set is a blessing. Now there are a lot of people that I know that are like, no, I would never do stand-in. I would never do background work. I'm an actor and that's all I want to be. I've heard people say that their agents and managers have told them never to be an extra on a movie set because that would diminish their chances of actually going back to that show and being a co-star role or something like that. I personally don't believe any of that is true. Even if you do extra work, you are such a blur that nobody's even going to know you're there. So it really depends on, like I said, your personal preference as to what whether or not you want to do it. And for me, I say bring it. If I'm on set, it's a good day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally agree. I do want to mention that the thing you just said about being on set, like say you did a movie or a show like Big Bang Theory, and you had were you on Big Bang Theory, right?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, you weren't. Okay, I thought for some reason I thought you were. But okay, say you were on that show or whatever. You walked by on the set of that. Would you know? Do people really think that? I mean, and what do you think about that? Is like if somebody were to cast you, or wanted like thinking of you for Kaley Cuoco's sister or something, you know, on the show, you know, like they were casting for that, and they might be. Do you think they really would be like, she was an extra, or do you think they wouldn't even like notice that, like remember that you were that extra at that one point or whatever, and not cast you in that? Like, because that's what I think. I think people like might think like, oh, somebody would see that person was extra on the set or something, but like most of the people might not even remember that because it was so like it was a while ago or something, you know.
Well, the people that are making the casting decisions are rarely ever on shooting day sets. They're usually in the production office. Yes, obviously, if they, you know, file through all of the background, you know, all of your central casting headshots or what have you, you know, and happen to see you and then pull over and see, oh, well, this person submitted for this. The chances of them even noticing are very, very
rare.
Slim.
Yeah.
Very, very rare. A lot of times it's two different casting directors even. They have one that casts the background and they have one that casts the principals.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it really does not matter at all. And they're not going to shun you like, oh, my gosh, this person's, you know, cute waitress number one. We can't even bring her in to cast her for this role. No,
And I know some casting directors are still really old school, and they won't accept anything unless it's mailed. They get, like, a video mailed to them. And this is from me, like, living in New York City. Like, some casting directors, they're, like, don't even want to hear from people, from managers or whatever, unless they get, like, it sent in the mail. Like, so it's, like, very kind of, like, hush-hush, because they don't want... You know, they don't want their email being flooded. They don't want their phone being flooded. So they make it hard because they think people are lazy and they're not going to mail stuff in, which people are. They're lazy and they're going to find the person that has the email and has the phone number versus the mail. And I thought to myself recently, I'm like, I should just say fuck it and start mailing out everywhere. Like, you know, with a letter, you know, I'm desperate.
That's what I did. I actually, the year before I moved to LA, I went out to New York City and I was there for a week and I literally had my headshots, my resumes, and I wasn't mailing them. I was actually being that annoying person that walked around to every single damn casting office in New York City dropping off my headshots. It probably ended up in the trash can, but you know what? I felt good about doing it.
Good, yeah.
But
something.
It's that persistence that pays off. And if anything, it keeps your mind healthy about it because it keeps you knowing that I'm doing everything I possibly can to get myself out there. And if it falls in the landfill, it falls in the landfill. But at least I know that I'm making the effort.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Definitely. Go ahead, Laura.
Exactly. One more time. Exactly. No, and you know, it's one of those things. Yeah, you just got to make the effort, and that goes to in hand to the beginning of the show when we were talking about the, you know, SAG versus non-union, doing the work, mm-hmm. putting the work in. It even just getting gigs like that, or like, you know, having, once you get your team, your, you know, your agent, your manager. Okay, mm-hmm. now it's okay. Do I have the energy to do that? To do that work? To send out to the casting directors and to try to do one-on-ones and meet for one-on-ones and get out there and show people, like, I've been doing this and I'm trained and this is what I do and I'm not here to be a celebrity. I'm here to just get a good fucking role and do a good job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And once they see that, you know, then they, you know, hopefully go past that. And usually if they see something in you, they will. They'll try to help you out. Then it's a full team, you know. Okay, you got casting mm-hmm. directors behind you with your manager and with your agent, and then boom, done. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's hard. You've got to do that work, and you've got to do that hustle. It's like sometimes that you kind of feel like a little, like, you know, like you just, you know, on like a hooker on the street kind of passing out your cigarettes to people for jobs. But it's instead for us, it's our resume. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
like, just let me go on the street and here's my photo.
Yep.
Here's what I do. You know, I used to go on the subway, and this is when I was a theater performer. I was a ballet dancer in New York City. I would go, when I had a show, I would, you know, we would make little flyers, and I would print out like 500 of them, and the thing to do is to get on the subway and just throw them everywhere on the subway. So no matter where everyone sits down, they got to pick it up to sit down on the seat. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
Well, I'm forced now to pick it up. I'm forced now to touch it and pick it up, and now I'm looking at it. And so that's the thing on the subway, is you just kind of put a flyer on every seat and on the ground and stuck on the window. So, you know, no matter where they look, they're forced to read it.
mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, and it's a thing to do maybe in LA. You still got the train service. You know, you got to try to do as much as you can. I know gigs from just doing the craziest things. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had this idea. I was like, ever since that billboard movie came out, I had this idea. I was like, what if I bought out a billboard in LA, like off the 405? It would be really fucking expensive, but it might be worth it. And it would just be really funny as a gag. Like, to put my headshot in. Go ahead.
Oh, there was actually a guy, this is a month ago, but there was a guy that bought out a bunch of, like, the bus station benches, because, you know, they put advertising and stuff on those as well. And
yeah.
He actually put his headshot and his phone number and all of, not his resume, but just all of his contact info on these bus stop benches. I don't even know how many he did, but there was at least 3 or 4 in the news story that I was watching about it. And he did get some work from it. And I'm thinking, damn, one, I wish I had that kind of money to do it, because that could not have been cheap. And two, good
right,
for you
exactly.
for thinking outside of the box.
Exactly. And it does come hand in hand. And some of the people that I know that have made it pretty far did come from a well-endowed family where they didn't have to work and audition.
Mm-hmm.
They just auditioned, you know, or, you know, they just worked with their agent and auditioned every day. And that's one of the things, like, for me, and I know for you, and I know for Jonathan, that's not how it is for us. And
mm-hmm.
The process will be a little bit longer, but, you know, at least, you know, when the fight breaks through, it's more meaningful because we did
Absolutely.
We had to be on our own. We didn't have
that. Have you guys watched Disaster Artist yet?
No,
yeah.
I haven't. I don't really want to. Is it bad?
No, it's great. It's wonderful. I love it. It's one of my favorite.
You know,
it's one of my favorite movies.
It's a perfect example of.
No, go ahead. I just don't want to support James Franco right now. But go ahead.
Well, it's a perfect example of just really believing in what you have and making it happen no matter what. It is, you know, it's a stupid movie, but it is a feel good movie though too, because it's like, wow, this guy actually did it. No matter how many times people are like, this sucks, you know, whatever, he actually did it, and, you know, kudos to him for doing it.
Yeah,
Yeah, he did the same thing that you guys were talking about. He actually put a billboard up of himself for years, years. I don't know how much it cost him. He had this huge billboard up in L.A. that said, you know, that had the room, like, stuff on it. So people, like, celebrities were looking at that going, you know, A, it had his face, you know, Tommy Wiseau, he's not the attractive guy.
No.
You know, James,
right.
James Franco even made himself look worse just to make that, you know, make him look that bad. But he's like this, you know, he's this weird looking dude who's on the picture of a movie called The Room. You know nothing about it from the picture or whatever. And then it has like his phone number, you know, it has phone number so people could call and find out about. And actually, if you call that number, that same number, you can actually, you'll get, you know, James Franco's voicemail. Like, you'll go to voicemail, and it'll be James Franco's voice doing Tommy, the character, whatever, the actor, and everything. It's really funny.
Oh, really?
Sometimes they actually answer. And James might actually answer, depending on if he's busy or if he, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I know right now is not the best time for whatever. I know James is, you know, all the stuff, all the personal stuff. But I still personally love that movie, even before James Franco broke everyone's heart. I love that movie. It's like seriously a great love story to the you know, an independent filmmaker who went and did it himself. You know, put himself onto the line and then made the worst movie of all time, or one of the worst movies of all time, because there's a lot of them out there. But he made this horrible movie, but thought he was making, like, the next Citizen Kane, you know? He thought he was going to make this wonderful movie, and it's just so bad, like, on every aspect. He just did not know what he was doing, which goes to show that if you have all that money to make a movie, you need to surround yourself with people who are going to help you make a good movie, which means that you need to make sure you listen to them when they tell you that's a bad idea, don't do that. You know? And that's what he didn't do. He didn't, he thought he knew what he was doing. He, unfortunately, you see a lot of, you know, quote unquote, indie filmmakers out there who won't listen to other people. So I've made it my vow in life that no matter what, I'll listen to notes, you know? And I don't necessarily have to agree with every single one of them, but I will listen to them. And if it's a good note, I will take it, you know, if it's something that I think will really help. The last thing I'll share about that is, like, I actually had a person go off on my script that I wrote, right, and stuff. And, like, you know, he wrote this huge email about everything. And then I was like, awesome, because I, like, all the stuff he said was stuff that needed to get fixed. You know, it wasn't like he was just tearing it apart. You know, he was, you know, he actually had some really good notes, and it helped me turn that script into a better script. So I feel like I feel like a lot of people, especially actors, need stuff like that. They need, you know, we as actors, we need to be kind of helped at some point, you know, directed, you know, to the point. And you can't be like closed-minded about it. You can't say, no, I'm not going to listen to that person. They don't know what they're talking about. This is my character. Because, you know, it's a collaboration. So, anyway,
exactly.
That's my rant.
you know, but it's so true. You know, it's like if you're not open-minded, then just in anybody, any job, any aspect, as a person, as a human being, you won't grow. If you can't sit there and take criticism or listen to somebody else's advice, and one, here's the thing, because there's another thing. Open-mindedness isn't sitting there saying, yeah, I'm listening to you, but still blocking them out and doing what you want. Being open-minded is saying, I will put into consideration what you're saying, and yes, I will put that into, you know, whatever I'm doing, whether, you know, okay, I'll try that and see if it works for me, or I'll, you know, for you as a writer, Jonathan, it's like, okay, maybe I'll put that, I'll write it down and see how it looks on paper. And it's one of those things that I feel like people, it's such a loose term with people, like, oh, be open-minded, but being open is, you know, okay, I'll just sit there and listen to you, but you can easily block. I've had so many people just, like, listen to other people, yet you could totally tell they're still blocking them out. And this is a lot of teenagers do that. You know, okay, I'm listening to you, but you're blocked out. I don't care what you say. I'm still going to do what you want. And in that in turn, you're not growing. You need to really be like, okay, you know, it's like the scientist, you know, in the sense where we have to experiment, okay? Even though I may think I like this because I feel I'll be more comfortable with this, we sometimes have to do the other end to understand, okay, yes, I'm going to go with this one, or put both of them together, or maybe the uncomfortable one is the right way to go, and then go from there. And so I feel like more artists need to do that, like kind of not be afraid to go, I'm going to try that and see if it works.
Yeah.
And thank you. And don't take it personally, just be like, thank you, I'm going to try that. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, I want criticism because it shows that people care about me. If people aren't criticizing me, then maybe I shouldn't be with them, because I want people around me that help me grow. I'd rather have people be like, God damn it, Laura, you could do better than that. To me, that's actually a compliment, to be told that I could do better, you know. I'm like, oh, you actually think I could do better. That's a good thing, you know.
Totally.
Yeah. 100% agree. Yeah. Well, what time is it, John? How long do we have?
Yeah, it is 4 minutes till the end of the show, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, on that note, well, how about you tell everybody where they can reach you, find you, and if there's anything out right now that they can see you performing on TV or whatever, and kind of shout out where they can find it and search it and all that stuff. So, just give all your contact information. No, just kidding. But you put all your social media and where they can find you and see your work and all that stuff.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Well, I am on IMDb under Tina Grimm. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook under Tina Grimm. And then the latest thing that you can find me in is, Jonathan and I were talking about it earlier at the top of the show, is Joe's War. It's a film about PTSD, starring myself, Michael Markowitz, Ed Asner, Armand Asante. And you can find that on Amazon to rent or buy. And so definitely check that out. And there'll be more stuff coming soon, but, you know, we'll have to see.
Yay! I'm so excited to finally talk to you. And thank you so much for opening up about SAG and all this stuff. I'm sure you definitely probably helped me and Jonathan out a lot. And me and Jonathan will probably chat this weekend about all that stuff that we've learned and more so. And so I want to say thank you so much for being open and real, and I respect you immensely for that, and I'm really excited to hopefully maybe meet you in the next couple of weeks while I'm filming here in the area, and I hope you have a fantastic evening and a good weekend with your daughter. You said you have a daughter, right?
I do, yes.
Okay. I send both of you best, all my good vibes for the weekend, and I hope you have a really fun time together.
Thank you.
We send you all the best too in the world. Especially on your set. So enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully things will be just as good like it was today on next week. We don't have anybody set yet for next week, but we will.
But it's the week after we do, right? Is the week after? No. I thought we had.
I don't think so.
Set. Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm going.
Do we?
I don't know.
No. I'm like a little worried that I set for
maybe
somebody.
I don't know. Well, we'll figure it out.
I don't think so. I've asked around, but I haven't got anybody that yet, I don't think. Okay. Yeah, we'll figure it out. It's always a last minute thing for all of us. So, you know, Tina was a last minute. Tina was a last minute thing. You know, when I asked her, you know, it was like, I think it was a couple days ago, you know, right? Like it was Monday, I think I asked you or something.
Well, thank you. And, that's how we run our show.
So
is that everything's last minute because why? We're all working.
We're all doing
50 million things to make this happen.
And I literally had no idea if Tina was going to be able to make it because, you know, she's been busy with everything. So I was just like, yes, all right, so that's awesome.
Let's do it.
You know,
yeah, it's been a good show. It's been a great show.
Thank you so much, Tina.
Thank you. That was so, it was so easy to chat with you. It's like it's been an hour and a half, and at that
point. Yeah, likewise. Well, thank you guys for having me. It was great talking
to
you
both. Thank you so much. Yeah, you too.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We'll definitely have you back on at some point.
Absolutely.
You know, especially if you have something else you want to promote and talk about, come back on.
Yeah, sure thing. And if you guys have any other questions, too, hit me up.
For sure.
Oh,
thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, you all have a wonderful night, and everybody listening, have a wonderful night, and we will see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.